at her. He scrolled through the list of files in Allison's backup. I don't remember that nickname. None of the family called her that. It was just in high school, but when I called her that at the cafe, she smiled and said she didn't think anyone remembered that old nickname. Dana's voice held a wobble. Untouched and forgotten, their sandwiches sat on the desk. They were going to find something from this. They had to. He leaned forward and let out an exultant cry. I can just download this entire backup to my computer. It will restore all her programs and files. Will it overwrite your files, though? Her voice regained its usual timbre, well modulated and polite. I can create a new user, then download it all as if it's her. He went to System Preferences and created a new user, then started the download. It's going to take a while. Let me get you a new sandwich and freshen your coffee. I should get going. I'm sure you have things to do. There was that wobble in her voice again. If you happen to have a change of clothes in the car, you can shower here. I mean, it would be great if you were here long enough to rejoice when I crack the encryption. He wouldn't blame her if she turned and rushed out of the cabin and never came back. The workout had caused her dark blonde hair to curl all over her head. I've got some clothes in the car. I'll grab them and shower while it's downloading. Her gaze searched his before she turned toward the door. How did he even explain what he was feeling? For so long he had felt stuck in a time warp, determined to be alone. But now he was beginning to imagine another kind of life, one that included Dana. The thought terrified him. He shoved the emotion away and went back to his computer. For the next 15 minutes he sat and watched the files copy. It seemed an eternity before the patter of the shower ended. When the bathroom door finally opened, she brought the scent of his soap and shampoo with her. He swiveled in the chair as she came back into the bedroom. Sorry, I only had guy shampoo. Dana looked even more beautiful after her shower with her wet hair slicked behind her ears and her skin flushed all over from the hot water. She smiled as she approached him. It will be fine, and I feel almost human again. He forced his clenched fist to relax and reach for the keypad. We're only at 10%. This could take all day. Probably not. A dimple showed in her cheek when she smiled. He turned his attention back to the computer. It was at 25%. Maybe another half an hour and he'd have it. Then what? What if he couldn't figure out the encryption password? He doubted Allison would have been able to figure out his passwords if she were on this end of things. But maybe she would. His preferred password was Esther's Fool. Maybe it was time he changed it and moved on to something more positive. She had no power over him anymore. He could clearly see her now, and he was lucky to have escaped. Dana's blue eyes were shadowed when he looked up and caught her gaze. He'd put that hurt there. What was wrong with him? One step forward and two backward. So you mind staying and working with me on this? I promised to whip up something better than sandwiches in a little while. I don't have anything else to do. Phantom will like hanging out with Spirit. We might actually crack this thing by bedtime. Let's not get too crazy. Her password might not be the same. She leaned over to look at the computer. His shampoo smelled much better on her. He had to heal this chasm that suddenly yawned between them. His stupidity had put it there, and he needed to figure out how to bridge it. She tapped the screen. I was thinking about the encryption program while I was in the shower. The password might have something to do with the investigation. She might have used your sister's preferred password. Do you have any idea what it might be? What might it be? Renee had been the sweetest person he'd ever known. She had a passion for people, kittens, and chocolate, in that order. As far as he knew, she didn't have a nickname. He shook his head. No clue. He looked back at the screen. It would still be a while, and there was time for him to make amends. Listen, Dana, I don't want to hide anything from you. There's something I need to tell you. She straightened. Okay? Esther came to see me last night. Your former fiancé? He nodded. It was nearly 10. She said she still loved me and wanted me back. Dana backed away as hurt overtook her face. So that's why you're being so cold. Her head bobbed as her eyes filled with tears. I totally understand. Don't think any more about it. You've loved her a long time. Love? It hadn't been real love at all. It was more like some kind of fever that had gripped him. He rose and stepped toward her. It's not like that. I told her to leave, but I'll be honest. It scared me to realize what might happen. Her eyes were huge as she stared at him. Might happen? He ran his fingertips over the rippled ridges of his scar. I'm not sure I'm ready for a relationship. You'd have to look at this a lot of years. The stricken expression in her eyes intensified. That boulder you carry around is going to break your back, Boone. Would you walk away if I had a scar? For a moment, he tried to imagine her with a scar. Would it change this pull he felt toward her, the way he loved being around her? Well, no. It wouldn't change who you are or how beautiful you are. Then why do you keep harping on that stupid scar? She touched his cheek. I stare into your eyes and I can't look away. It's like we have this connection that happened from the first moment we met. You see me on the inside. I don't think anyone has ever even noticed how much I love Phantom of the Opera or that I hate the way my hair frizzes. You pay attention. You care. Her fingers made their way up to his hair and tangled there as she pulled his head down. Her sweet breath enticed him, and he lowered his lips to hers. She twisted her fingers more tightly in his hair, and her eyes were still closed when he lifted his head. You make a lot of sense.
Of course I do.
She took her time to stroke his cheek, then stepped back and turned toward the computer. Looks like the download is finished. Let's see what we've got. He moved reluctantly back to the chair and called up the encryption program, the pressure built in his chest as he typed in the Alley Cat password. The spinning beach ball swirled for a moment, then the program opened. That's it. We're in. I'll print out all the pages. The flames in the kindling caught and flared. Boone added more wood and stepped back as the fire settled into a soft crackle. Let's split up the pages. What I've read so far is background I know all about. The dogs lay together on a rug near the fire, and the cozy picture it brought made Dana sigh. Would she ever feel true safety and peace in her life like the dogs snuggle so close together? Dana pulled a red chenille afghan from the back of the sofa over her feet and legs.
I don't know how much, so I'll be reading it with a fresh eye. Let me have the early stuff, and you take the ones from the past few weeks.
She took the pages Boone handed her and spread them on her lap. Good plan. He sat on the floor in front of the sofa. His shoulders touched her knees, and she had to resist the urge to plunge her fingers into his thick hair.
Focus, Dana.
She inhaled and picked up the first of the pages. They were mostly a recap of what Allison knew about Renee's death. A vein in Dana's neck pulsed at the description of the murder scene. How did Boone bear it? What must it be like for him to know some sociopath held his beloved sister's face in the water tank? And what would he do when he discovered the identity of the murderer? She couldn't stop herself from reaching for him and resting her hand on his shoulder. He swiveled his head to look at her with a question in his eyes.
I'm sorry.
Her throat felt thick.
This has to be hard for you.
No matter how many times I've read it, I can't keep the mental images from forming with every word. The sorrow in his eyes broke her heart. She removed her hand and went back to reading. The only way she could help was to find the killer. She flipped to the next page. It held only one line of text. November 15. What really happened to Dana's parents? Her eyes widened, and her breath caught in her throat.
Boone?
What's wrong? Wordlessly, she held out the page to him.
Where was she going with this?
He took the paper and stared at it, then looked back up at her. I don't know. She never mentioned it to me. Your parents died on a boat, didn't they? The mental images slammed into her, their bodies floating in the water at the foot of Copper Falls, the smashed-up boat. The way her cries echoed through the canyon. Focus. Why would she be asking a question like that? It has nothing to do with this investigation. And the date is the day I came to town. I don't understand. His frown deepened. And why is it mixed in with the pages detailing Renee's murder? It's like she went back to that spot and inserted it, though it had nothing to do with Renee. Her world seemed to shift and take on shadows she'd never seen before. This was all mixed up, and she didn't know how they could be expected to figure it out. Boone put down the sheaf of papers. Tell me what you remember of the day your parents died. Maybe someone was there who was connected to Renee. I told you the other day how their boat went down. Yes, but let's talk about before, earlier in the day. What happened? It was a time in her life she hated to think about. Had her desire to fit in, to please everyone, started with that bright summer day with the sun blazing down and reflecting on the blue water? Maybe. Nothing had been the same after that, nothing. I'd been spending the whole summer with my aunt and uncle in Rock Harbor. My dad had gotten a new job, and Mom thought it would be easier for me not to be there when all my things left in the house. He rose and settled on the sofa beside her. You didn't want to move? She shook her head. I'd lived in that house my whole life. I was going to change schools, too, and I was worried about leaving my friends. For weeks I'd been able to forget the shadow looming over my life. Mom and Dad came to pick me up. They were staying a week before we all left to go to our new place. The last day of our vacation was a little blustery and cool, but Dad had been hot on the trail of a big steelhead. He wasn't about to lose his last day of fishing. She smiled at the memory. Did you have a fishing guide? Did you stop at an outfitter before going out, see anyone or anything unusual? She thought back. We went to the bait shop. Dad also got some new tackle and lures. Tommy Whitaker waited on us. We'd gotten to be friends that summer. He had a bad feeling about us going out that day and tried to talk my dad out of it. He thought there was a big storm coming. Some people have always thought Tommy was a little bit of a seer. He's warned me off the water several times, and he's always been right. Tommy was born with Down syndrome, but a sweeter, gentler person didn't walk the face of the earth.
You're not saying Tommy had something to do with the accident?
No, no, nothing like that. I just mentioned it in case it triggered a memory. She nodded. I hadn't even remembered it until now. Mom didn't want to go. She wanted to stay home and pack, but Dad coaxed her into going. Chris, too, and she could never deny him anything. She loved Chris like he was her own kid, so she packed a lunch and we went.
Did you stop to get groceries?
Yes. Some peanut butter and bread, as well as chips and soda.
So you saw quite a few people that day.
His arm crept around her shoulders. I guess you're right. But what does that have to do with Renee? She leaned her head against his arm. He sighed and removed his arm. I don't know, but I think we should look at the old records of the accident and see if we're missing anything. He scooted back to the floor.
Back to work.
Here's something. Dana said a few minutes later. Allison mentions that Faith Rogerson's best friend says Justin had food allergies and that Faith had to be careful about what she cooked for him.
What kind of food allergies?
She notated that she was going to call Renee's friends and see if anyone knew. It doesn't look like she did. Boone reached for his phone. I'll check with her pastor to see if he knows anyone she was close with other than Allison. I'm sure there were others. I'll call Pastor Saul Rigney. It's only 6 in the evening on the West Coast. I'll put it on speakerphone so you can hear, too.
Boone, how are you doing, my friend?
Pastor Saul's voice boomed out.
We've got more trouble, Saul. You probably haven't heard about Allison.
Your cousin?
Yes.
Boone told him about the murder and what they knew so far about the connection.
Do you know anyone in the church who might have double-dated with Renee and Tyler?
Renee and Shanna were pretty close, and we went out for burritos a few times on Friday night.
So you met him. Do you know if he had any food allergies?
Strange question, but yeah. I can't remember what it was, though. Some kind of common.
Shanna's at a ladies' meeting right now, but should be home by 9. I'll shoot you a text if she remembers. And I'll be praying for you, Boone. I'm really sorry about this.
Dana jotted down food allergies on a notepad. What kind of common item might be at a Mexican restaurant? Corn, maybe? Wheat? Dairy? Lots of things it could be.
Thanks, Saul.
Boone ended the call. She showed him the note of possible allergens. So maybe it's another indication that the two men are one and the same. She yawned and looked at the clock. I need to be getting home. Phantom's ears perked at the word home, and he rose and stretched.
Looks like your dog is tired, too.
Boone stood and helped her slip her coat on. He grabbed the front of her jacket and pulled her in for a kiss.
Saying goodnight is a good excuse for a kiss.
She smiled up at him. I don't think you need an excuse.
Chapter 27. Another day, another city. Why had Laurie once thought the travel would be glamorous and exciting? She sat at a table for two in the Eagle's Nest atop the Hyatt Regency and looked out the window at the city lights of Indianapolis. At least Indy was a clean, safe city that had a friendly Midwestern vibe. A server carrying a steaming steak passed her, and the aroma made her mouth water. Peter should be here any minute, and she smiled at the thought of seeing him again. She'd missed him terribly. She flipped over her left hand and studied the glittering ring on her finger. They still hadn't set a date. Maybe they could do that tonight. She was impatient to begin her new life with him. Where would they live? And did he have a house already? They'd discussed so little of their backgrounds. She saw his familiar blonde head and waved. His easy grin lifted her spirits even more. Dressed in khaki slacks and a navy blazer over a crisp white shirt, he was incredibly handsome. Several women in the restaurant shot him admiring glances, and he was all hers. She lifted her face for a kiss and soaked in his spicy scent and firm lips. It was much too brief. She opened her eyes as he moved to his seat across from her. Did you order for me? She shook her head. I wasn't sure what you wanted, and I thought you'd better stress to the server how serious your allergy is to garlic. He smiled across the table at her. I've missed you. Have you had a good week so far? She shrugged. I was lonely without you. The server arrived, and they both ordered the center-cut filet without garlic. She reached across the table to take his hand. His fingers squeezed hers gently, and warmth flooded into her chest. She was so lucky to have him. On impulse, she grabbed her phone and came around to crouch beside him. She lifted the phone to take a selfie. He knocked her arm down. What are you doing? Taking a picture of us. I don't have a single one, which is crazy. I don't like having my picture taken. He scooted his chair away. So it was going to be one of those kinds of nights. Suppressing a sigh, she moved back to her seat and put her phone away. She picked up her water glass. Have you thought about where we'll live when we're married? We really haven't talked much about the future. He shrugged.
I haven't thought about it.
Where do you live now?
You've never really said.
He traced circles on her palm with his thumb.
I actually don't have a place. I gave up my house about 2 years ago, since I was never home. It seemed a waste to spend the money on a house that sat empty.
What about your belongings?
I got rid of most everything. I have a small storage shed here in Indianapolis I visit from time to time.
Uneasiness rose in her chest at the thought of having nowhere to call home. That's no way to build a marriage, though. We'll want something that's our own, where we can establish a home base. I want to have my things there, to be able to trade out clothes. It's important to build a sense of family and connection. I don't want to live out of a suitcase every single day of my life.
He withdrew his hand and his lips flattened. It seems silly, Laurie. We both travel so much that it would be a waste of money. Still, if that's what you want, I can think about it.
His secrecy was driving her crazy. They had to talk about things, their past, their lives, their families. I live in Michigan, in case you're wondering. You've never asked. I have an older brother, and both my parents died when I was a teenager. How about you? He cocked a brow.
I like Michigan. Where do you live?
Was he being deliberately secretive? She stared at him, trying to read his hooded expression. You wouldn't have heard of it. I'm in the Upper Peninsula, a little town called Rock Harbor. It's between Ontonagon and Houghton. He sat back in his chair.
I've been there. Cute town.
I'm surprised. Hardly anyone knows where it is. A thread of tension tightened around his eyes. She studied him, trying to figure out what he was thinking. What if we bought a house there? Or an apartment? Real estate isn't expensive. That way, I'd be able to see my family on the weekends. You'll love them. My brother, Cade, is a park ranger, and his wife runs a training center for search and rescue dogs. They're lovely people. And she missed them. She hadn't realized it until she started talking about them.
He loosened his tie and released the top button of his shirt.
I thought being with me would be enough, Laurie. Are you going to be just like most women who want the moon? Give me this and give me that. Stay near my family.
I thought you were different. Her pulse ratcheted up.
Anyone would want a home base, Peter. You're being unreasonable. How would we even be together without a home?
We've been together most of the time since we've been engaged.
What about kids? She shot back. We won't always be free-spirited and able to travel the country week after week. We'll eventually need to settle down.
You want kids?
His voice rose a bit. She saw people looking their way and tried to tamp down the discord.
Well, sure. Don't you?
I just assumed.
That's an assumption you shouldn't have made. What if I can't have kids? Or you can't? You're painting this rosy picture of the perfect family in your head, and nothing in life is guaranteed. I didn't have that kind of perfect life. Did you?
Well, it was mostly that way until my parents died. Cade did the best he could, but I never really got over losing them. I guess that's why I'm looking to have my own family unit.
She reached across the table to take his hand again. It was stiff and unyielding.
Don't you want that, too? Why marry me if you don't intend to be a family unit?
His blue eyes were like chips of Superior's frozen waters.
I'm beginning to wonder how well suited we are, Laurie. I thought you were a free spirit like me and would want to continue our lifestyle. I want us to be able to travel the world and see exotic places like Cambodia and Bali. If we're locked down with a so-called American dream of 2.4 kids and a house, we'll turn into someone just like Cade and Bree.
There's nothing wrong with that. They have a good life.
She pulled her hand back as the server brought their food. She might have made a big mistake.
Boone banked the fire for the night, then turned off the lights and turned to go to his bedroom. While he still wasn't totally ready to let go of any fear he had about a new relationship, Dana was becoming more and more important to him. In his heart of hearts, he knew she was nothing like Esther, but it would take his head a little while to fully accept it. His cell phone lit up with a text message from Saul that read, "Tyler, allergic to garlic." Boone shot back a message of thanks, then grabbed the files from Allison's computer and started down the hall. Tail wagging, Spirit followed him. When his cell phone rang, he assumed it was Saul calling to talk more about the murders, but it wasn't him.
"Detective Morgan, I wasn't expecting to hear from you again so soon."
Harry's smooth southern voice held a trace of weariness.
"Sorry to call so late, Mr. Carter, but I thought you'd want to know the FBI has found two other cases that bear remarkable similarity to the murders of your sister and Ms. Rogerson. The case is getting high priority. A team of federal agents is going to be working the case."
Two more cases. He flipped on his bedroom light, then sat on the edge of his bed. Spirit leaped atop the quilt, then lay down beside him and stared at him with mournful eyes. He needed to answer instead of just sitting here in shock.
"I'd be happier if it weren't for realizing how evil this man truly is. Allison was right all along. Up until her death, I'd poo-pooed her conviction Renee's death was tied to the Rogerson one. But she was right about everything."
"I'm afraid so. If not for you and your cousin, his existence would still be a mystery and he'd be preying on innocent women in the shadows."
"He still might be," Boone said. "He's not in custody yet. There may be even more cases. It's a little too early to tell, but these other two cases had exactly the same M.O. Brides drowned the night before their weddings, and no pictures of the mysterious fiancés. And while we don't have him in custody yet, we'll be able to compare notes between the cases and see what we turn up."
Boone looked down at the sheaf of papers beside him.
"I found out something along that line tonight. In Allison's notes, she mentioned that Dixon was allergic to something. I called Renee's pastor and found out he was allergic to garlic. Have you discovered Leland's allergy yet?"
"It's also garlic."
The detective's voice held satisfaction.
"One more clue to follow, Mr. Carter. I'll be in touch."
"Thanks for calling, Detective." Boone turned off his phone and picked up the papers he'd printed from Allison's files. He forgot to mention Allison's question about what had happened the day Dana's parents died, but it probably wasn't relevant.
Bright LED lights flooded the records department with enough light that it was easy to forget it was in the basement. Deputy Doug Montgomery hiked his pants up over his big belly and gestured at the rows of beige metal cabinets.
The files are all here. They are arranged by year. When did your parents die?
Dana shifted a bit closer to Boone, who had joined her at the end of her shift. Her lunch was still a hard lump in her stomach, and she wasn't sure she was ready to look at details of the accident that killed her parents. 20 years ago? Montgomery stopped and peered at several cabinets before yanking open the fifth one in the row. The metal screeched to a halt.
Help yourself. I'll be in my office if you need me. A copier's in the corner there by the table if you need it.
Dana wet her lips and nodded. Thanks. Montgomery closed the door behind him, leaving them alone in the cavernous room that suddenly felt hot and stuffy. She wiped her clammy palms on her jeans and forced herself to step to the files. She found the file labeled Newell about halfway back. It almost felt hot in her hand, though she knew it was just her trepidation. She'd spent most of her life trying to forget that day, and now here she was, plunging headlong into all the facts. Boone's hand, warm and comforting, came down on her shoulder.
I'll be right here with you. Let's just see if anything's here. It's probably nothing. I can look for you if you'd rather not read it all.
She shook her head. I have to face it. The file was ominously thick in her hands as she carried it to the wooden library table. Boone pulled out a chair for her, and she settled onto it, then opened the file. The picture on top was of the wrecked boat, and she shuddered. He touched her shoulder again.
You okay?
She couldn't tear her gaze from the picture. I'm fine. It's just hard to think about that day.
You were 8, right?
Yes.
A hard age to lose your mother.
All these years she tried not to think about her mother. It was as if grief had blanketed her life, the dark folds muffling the feelings and memories of her first 8 years of life. Now that she was staring at the picture, it felt wrong that she'd allowed it to happen. Her parents had loved her and her brother Aaron. Snippets of events flooded her head. Aaron protecting her from a bully at school. Mom discussing their favorite movie, Phantom of the Opera, with her. Dad taking her to fish for the first time. It was hard to catch her breath with a crushing weight in her chest. What was wrong with her? Why had she blocked out so much of it? Those had been good times, not bad. Her hand trembled as she moved the picture to the other side of the file. A close-up of her father's dead face was next, and she slammed her eyes shut and stood, nearly knocking the chair over. I can't do this.
Let me do it.
Boone's hand steered her away from the table.
There's a coffee pot by the copier. Get some coffee while I take a look at it all. If there's anything I need to ask, you'll be close by.
Miserably aware of her cowardice, she nodded and headed to the coffee pot. It shouldn't be this hard. Coffee sloshed over the side as she poured it into a cup. She took a big gulp and grimaced. It tasted old and burnt, but the acrid flavor steadied her and anchored her here to this place and not to the events of a lifetime ago. Her hand was steady as she walked back to the table. She wouldn't look at any pictures. Maybe the details of what the investigators found wouldn't be so traumatic. Find anything? Boone held up a paper. Were you familiar with the boat they took out that day? A storm washed it ashore and they were able to examine it. The investigation stated it wasn't owned by your uncle but by a neighbor. Owen Cork. I'd forgotten that. Mr. Cork owned a marina, and he was my uncle's best friend. Since there were so many of us who wanted to go out that day, he loaned him a fishing boat. Mr. Cork had just repaired it and put a new motor on it.
Looks like an 18-footer with 3 seats. So that's why you went with your uncle and his family?
She nodded. They had a big boat that held 6. We were short a seat for all of us to go, and no one wanted to stay home.
The report mentions that the hole caused by the log going through the hull might have been pre-existing.
Cork swore it was sound when it went out, though,
so that avenue of questioning appears to have been dropped.
She detected the suspicion in his furrowed brow as he looked back at the report. You're not sure? He shrugged.
I know boats. And the description sounds fishy.
The hole was too perfectly round. It sounds like it might have been a plug that got knocked out. It could have happened in the impact, but I'd love to take a look at it myself. It's probably in a boat graveyard. She suppressed a shudder. His gaze sharpened. Something wrong with going to a boat graveyard? I was trapped in the hold of an old boat overnight. It belonged to Mr. Cork, strangely enough. I was 12, and I haven't been on a boat since. Again, it was something she tried not to remember. He made a copy of the entire file, then took her arm. Let's go see Mr. Cork. Chapter 28. Broken and abandoned boats stretched for 4 acres. Boone had been to Cork boat salvage before, but it had been several years. A layer of snow coated the hulls, but no amount of snow could cover the stoved-in holes in some of them. Busted motors rusted away in the elements, and rats had torn the stuffing from boat seats and left them as deflated as an abandoned inner tube. Dana looked a little pale as she got out of his truck and tucked some errant curls back into her sock cap. It looks smaller and sadder than I remember. When I was a girl, this was a fun place to play hide-and-seek. It seemed to go on forever, too.
Perception is a funny thing. I fell out of a cherry tree once and sprained my ankle. I crawled for what seemed like miles to the back door. When I look at the yard today, it's only about 20 feet.
She looked around. I don't see Mr. Cork. Wasn't he supposed to be here somewhere?
His wife said he was wandering around looking for a part to repair a boat.
Boone caught movement from his right side and turned to see a stooped figure rummaging through the remains of what appeared to be an old Lund boat. Grizzled hair stuck out from under a blue knit hat. Bundled up in a down jacket, Cork appeared heavier than he really was. The man caught sight of them and straightened. A grin broke out on his thin, weathered face.
Boone Carter, is that Miss Dana with you, eh?
His broad Upper accent stressed the first syllable of every word. Dana stepped past Boone.
It's me, Mr. Cork. Good to see you again.
The old man approached and shook hands with him.
I heard tell in town that you'd been spotted about. You here to stay?
He was about 85, but he looked about 20 years younger, probably from staying active. Boone saw him around town most weeks. He was often carrying equipment that would cripple a younger man. Planning on it. I'm working as a dispatcher. Cork's alert brown eyes twinkled.
That's good, that's good. You should stop over and say hey to the missus. She has fond memories of baking cookies with you and your mama.
Dana's smile looked forced. I'll do that. The old man appeared to be waiting for them to state their business, so Boone obliged.
You remember the day Dana lost her family, I'm sure.
Cork's smile vanished, and he nodded.
Yeah? Hard to forget such an awful thing. Do you still have the boat that went down with him?
He blinked, then nodded again.
What you be wanting with that old heap? It won't tell you much, except its sad story.
Boone hesitated. Unsure if he should tell the old guy, he suspected he was lying about the previous damage. Before he could make up his mind and what to say, Dana took a step forward. She held out her hand toward him in an appealing gesture. There's so much I've forgotten about that day, so much I've blocked out. I need to come to terms with what happened. The suspicious glint in Cork's eyes faded.
Yeah, I can see that.
He turned and pointed toward an old grain bin whose roof was partially caved in.
It's in yonder building. Mind your step, though. The old grain bin could fall if you give it a good shove. The boat is on the north end under an old tarp. I'd go with you, but I've got a doctor appointment. Wife's been harping on me to get a checkup. Foolishness, I call it, eh?
We'll be fine by ourselves. Thanks, Owen. At least they wouldn't have to hide their interest in the hull. The old guy gave them a nod, then walked off toward an old barn where a gray pickup sat. Boone led the way in the opposite direction. Birds fluttered away in indignation as he stepped into the leaning building. Sky showed through in multiple places in the roof, and bird nests and spider webs covered the interior walls. It didn't appear anyone had been here much over the years.
There it is.
Boone picked his way through the assortment of boat parts toward a tarp-covered shape. He tugged the canvas off the boat, and a mouse squeaked and ran in terror. Dana's gulp was audible.
I hate mice.
You don't need to come any closer. I know what I need to see.
He leaned over the side and lifted two torn life cushions out of the way to reveal a gaping hole in the hull. Just as the report had stated, the hole wasn't jagged, but as round as if someone had used a hole saw on it.
There it is.
He took out his phone and snapped some pictures. Dana stepped closer and peered over the side. What do you think?
Looks like someone might have repaired it by making a hole and filling it with a wooden plug that came loose during the impact.
So it likely didn't really have anything to do with the accident.
That would be my guess. But I think we need to find out where this boat came from and if Cork knows who repaired it.
Why bother if it isn't likely to have caused the accident?
I'm giving Cork the benefit of the doubt, but it's possible someone did a shoddy job and the repair came out. Maybe the boat was filling with water and your dad couldn't control it well enough. Steering a boat filled with water is like trying to guide a log in the rapids.
Her blue eyes clouded. You still wonder if someone did it deliberately and killed them, don't you?
I don't think that's the case, but Allison obviously wondered. So we need to pursue that thread until we're sure.
You game? She squared her shoulders and nodded. Let's go talk to the Corks.
I'm starving. Let's grab a pasty at the cafe first. By then, Owen will be back from the doctor's.
Was his motive purely hunger, or was he just eager to see that lost expression in her eyes vanish for a while? The Cork residence was as familiar as if Dana had been there yesterday. The big house, built in the 1800s, was in pristine condition. Bright blue shutters contrasted with the white siding, and the wide wraparound porch was just as inviting as she remembered. The swing moved gently in the wind, and two big pots on either side of the door held the frozen remains of Mums. The two-car garage sat next to the road like most in the UP. Boone pulled into the drive next to it, and she got out almost before the truck rolled to a stop. Boone had taken the lead with most of this, and it wasn't fair to him. This was her family who had died. The accident was more than an unlikely clue. It was where her entire world had shifted on its axis. She didn't think she would ever be whole until she faced what had happened. It was time to get her head out of the sand and examine her life in all its pain and trauma. With Boone on her heels, she marched up the wide painted steps to the blue door and pressed the doorbell. No answer. Boone reached past her and rang it again. Moments later, a familiar female voice called, "Coming!" Jane Cork threw open the door and drew Dana into a hug. "Owen told me he'd seen you." She pulled away and held Dana at arm's length. "Let me look at you."
"Yeah."
"I see you have the look of your mama, just like Owen said." She tugged on her arm. "Come in, child. I want to know what you've been up to."
Jane hadn't changed much. Her hair was still dyed the most gaudy shade of red imaginable, and her brown eyes sparkled with the joy of life. She wore enough necklaces to drown her if she fell overboard, and Dana was sure she'd seen the tie-dyed blue and purple skirt 15 years ago. Jane was barefoot and wore a shapeless blue sweater over the skirt. Dana had always loved her free spirit, and warmth spread through her chest. At least, some things never changed. She kicked off her boots on the rug in the entry and handed Jane her coat. Boone did the same. Jane's house was always spotless, and she liked to keep it that way. "I've got coffee on," Jane said, "and I just took snickerdoodles out of the oven. I know they're your favorite." "I haven't had a snickerdoodle since I left here." The scent of cinnamon made her mouth water. "I gave you my recipe," Jane scolded. Her bare feet slapped on the wood floors as she led the way to the kitchen table where a tray of cookies awaited. "I know. They aren't as fun to make or eat without you there. Have a seat and I'll pour the coffee. Owen is washing up and will be out in a minute." Boone pulled out a chair for Dana and she settled on the hand-woven cushion. She'd sat at a loom and helped Jane make them when she was 15. This warm kitchen, with its cheery blue and white decor and wide windows, felt like coming home. She'd cried on Jane's shoulder many times over the years. Shuffling footsteps came from behind her, and Dana twisted in her seat to see Owen entering the kitchen. Without his coat, she could tell he'd lost some weight. He smiled at her and reached past to snag a cookie.
"Ah, it's about time you got here.
Jane hasn't even let me have a cookie crumb since I got back from the doctor's.
Only one cookie?
Jane walked toward them with cups of coffee. The doctor says your sugar is too high and you've got to watch your diet.
Owen sighed. Woman, I'm 85. I hope my maker doesn't make me hang out on this old earth until I'm 100. Might as well enjoy the time I have left. I've made a particular request to the good Lord that I'd get a never-ending supply of snickerdoodles in heaven.
Jane sniffed and rolled her eyes. He can't take you until I go, so I plan to keep you as healthy as possible.
Dana wrapped her fingers around the cup and let it warm her fingers. The thought of anyone believing this sweet couple could have had anything to do with the accident was ridiculous.
Boone took a sip of his coffee.
Thanks for seeing us. We had a couple of questions and wanted to see if you remembered.
Jane glanced at her husband, and a slight frown creased her forehead.
Owen is having a little trouble in that department, but we'll do what we can.
Jane? Owen's voice held a thread of warning. She waved her hand.
Oh, posh Owen, you think people don't notice when you forget what day it is? You know what the doctor said. No sense in trying to hide it.
Alzheimer's? Dana hated the thought of her friends going through that. Maybe they shouldn't have come.
Boone shot her a warning look, and his hand clamped onto her wrist when she made a move to rise. If you can't remember, it's fine.
I noticed a round hole in the boat's hull, and we saw mention of it in the official report, too.
Do you remember where you got that boat, and if you'd had to make any repairs on it?
Owen stared back at them.
I bought that boat brand new, and had it for years. The only thing I ever had to do to the body was paint it. I'd done some repairs, but it was only to the engine. The hull was in fine shape when it went out. Chris had taken it out fishing just the week before. I know it looked strange that the hull was so round, but it was just a fluke, believe me. I hid nothing from the sheriff.
He glanced at his wife.
Jane nodded, too.
That was my favorite boat. It was small enough for me to handle easily, and I often took it fishing myself.
Because it was mine, Owen babied it.
She nudged the plate toward Dana.
Have another cookie.
Do you think there was anything suspicious about the accident?
A tingle went up Boone's spine when the corks looked at each other.
What is it?
Owen?
Jane's voice held a warning note.
She might as well hear it, hon.
Jane pressed her lips together and got up to get the coffee pot.
Oh, go on, you old coot.
Owen stared at Dana.
There was talk in town that your dad scuttled the boat. He'd lost his job and was despondent, or so the rumor mill went.
Dana gasped and stared at the old man.
That's not true. We were moving to a new place where he'd gotten a different job. He was happy that week. All I remember is laughter and fun.
Owen reached for his cup.
There was likely nothing to the story then, but that's what everyone was saying. Even Chris mentioned he'd wondered about that.
I'll talk to Chris.
Dana couldn't believe this was the first time she was hearing this rumor, but it wasn't true. She was sure of it.
Chapter 29. The sun shone weakly through the thin clouds, and the wind tried to tear Boone's knit cap from his head. He tugged his hat back over his ears and went to the mailbox to see what had been left for him yesterday. The door, thick with rust, squealed as he opened it. He pulled out a handful of junk mail and a small, padded envelope. He hadn't ordered anything. He frowned at the return address, somewhere in Washington. But it wasn't his sister's address. Her apartment had been cleared long ago. Tires crunched on gravel and snow, and he looked up. Dana's blue Prius slowed in front of the cabin. She'd worked overtime yesterday, so he hadn't seen her since Thursday, when they'd talked to the Corks. She must have the day off. Something he was hoping for. She got out and patted Spirit, who was sniffing noses with Phantom.
Anything new in Allison's file?
Nothing yet. I'm still going through the notes. A lot of them are handwritten, and she wasn't the world's best writer.
He unlocked the workout building and let them in. The lights hummed as he flipped them on.
You're off all day, right?
She took off her coat and hung it on a hook. Her navy stretch pants and sleeveless tank showed off her slim figure.
Yes, why? Just wondering how long I've got you for.
His gaze lingered on her small feet, tipped in red nail polish. She was so darn cute, with her hair up and her face devoid of makeup.
You ready to get started?
Sure.
They sparred for an hour, and he was breathing heavily and dripping with sweat by the time they finished.
"You're getting pretty good. I think you can hold your own if you're attacked."
She grabbed a towel from her bag and dabbed her forehead.
"I think so, too. I feel confident." "Have you heard anything more from Garrett since he called?"
She shook her head. "Nothing. I hope it stays that way. Maybe he really is gone." His gaze landed on the padded shipping bag he'd forgotten, and he picked it up. After he ripped open the top, a USB drive fell into his hands.
"What the heck?"
"What's wrong?" Dana came to stand beside him. He spied a paper inside and pulled it out. "It's from Detective Morgan. This is all the data off Renee's phone. They have to keep her phone for the investigation, but he was hoping I could look at the data and see if anything rings a bell with me."
"That's generous of him.
He's a good guy. He really wants to find the killer." He tossed the envelope and junk mail in the trash.
"You have time to look at this with me? I've got leftover pizza for lunch."
"Sounds good to me. I've got to get Chris at the airport in an hour and a half, but I have time now." He carried the drive to the desktop computer in the corner and plugged it into a port. The screen came up, and he scanned the list of files.
"Looks like her pictures, files, and emails are all here."
He dragged the files to his desktop. "I want to see the pictures first. I'm hoping to see a picture of her fiancé." Dana pulled up a chair beside him. "I'm not sure how much help I can be." He didn't say that her presence alone calmed him. She'd think he had lost his mind. "You might see something in the background I miss." He took his time scrolling through the pictures, pausing long enough to absorb the entire scene. Renee, having Mexican with two girlfriends, mugging it up poolside with Allison, on an ATV in the desert with a giant cigarro in the background, hiking on Mount Rainier, and cooking at someone's house.
"I think these are older."
He called up the information on one.
"They're from 2 years ago. Let's keep looking."
He scrolled past 6 months' worth of pictures, then stopped at a birthday party.
"This was her 25th birthday. I wish I'd been there. I think she met Tyler there, though. Keep an eye out for anyone who seems to be looking at her, too. Maybe he is with another group at this party."
His eyes were going bleary from looking so hard at the screen, and he blinked. His finger was on the button to go forward when Dana stopped him.
"Can you enlarge this one?"
"I think so."
He enlarged it and leaned forward.
"What are we looking at?"
"That guy, half hidden behind the woman in the white dress. He looks a little familiar, but it's too blurry to see his face since he's half turned away.
I'll see if I can enhance it later with another program." He started moving through the pictures again, but an hour later they were no closer to seeing Tyler Dixon, at least as far as he could tell. The last picture was of Renee's engagement ring on her hand. It looked vaguely familiar, though he didn't consciously remember seeing it. Dana rose and reached for her coat.
"It's nearly 5, so I'd better go get Chris. Let me know if you see anything."
She moved closer to him and lifted her face for a kiss. It was beginning to feel so natural to hold her and imagine she was his. And maybe that dream would come true. United Airlines serviced the Houghton Airport. Dana sat in the parking lot with the heater pumping out warmth until she saw Chris, roller bag in tow, stride from the terminal. She tooted the horn and waved as she pulled the car up beside him and popped the trunk. He slung his bag into the trunk, then climbed into the passenger seat.
"Thanks for picking me up."
His cologne filled the Prius's small space. She sent a smile his direction as she pulled into traffic.
"It's good to see you. Even if you make me jealous with your tan."
He grinned.
"They don't call it sunny California for nothing.
Everything okay at home?" She hesitated, then decided now was as good as any other time to question him about the accident that killed her parents and brother.
"I ran into the Corks on Thursday. They haven't changed a bit, just gotten a little older."
Foot traffic from shoppers and college students was thick as she drove through town. She had to concentrate to avoid running down careless students.
"Have you seen them?"
He shifted in his seat and shook his head.
"I haven't seen them in ages, not since I moved away. I'm here so rarely, there's not much time to socialize. How are they doing?"
"Still spry. Listen, I've been thinking about the day my family drowned. I wanted to see the boat and just try to make sense of it for myself."
What the heck? Why would you want to relive all that, Dana? It's painful, so leave it in the past.
I know, but I can't. Owen mentioned there was a rumor going around after the accident. People said my dad was despondent after losing his job and killed himself, Mom, and Aaron. Do you remember hearing a rumor like that?
He pulled off his sock hat, and his blonde hair stuck up.
Yeah, I heard it.
I thought there might even have been some truth in it.
She shook her head as she accelerated out of town on the windswept road.
It's not true. Dad had a new job and we were heading for a new place after our vacation. He wasn't despondent at all. We had a great time when they got here. He took me fishing and pushed me in the swing. Mom laughed a lot. I remember.
Why was she so desperate to prove the theory wrong? She was just a kid and could have done nothing to alter things. And the laughing man she remembered could never have killed his entire family. Besides, if it were true, why didn't he make sure I was in the boat with him? They took you instead.
Are you sure you're remembering that weekend and not something when you were younger? You were only 8, Dana. Most people don't remember all that much from their childhood. I don't.
Was she wrong? A memory of her dad and Mom on the ferry to Isle Royale National Park flashed into her mind. I remember lots from that time, Chris. We went to Isle Royale and up to Copper Harbor. We ate lots of ice cream and went swimming in Superior. I remember it all. He fell silent a moment, then turned his face toward her.
I didn't want to say anything, but I heard your parents fighting one night. The night before the accident, your dad yelled something about he was good for nothing and all he had facing him was a low-paying job and humiliation. That your mom would be better off without him, so yeah. When that rumor started, I thought it might be possible.
But why scuttle it with you in the boat, too? Why not make sure I was in there?
I don't know. He made sure I had on a life jacket, but he said nothing to anyone else. After the accident, I began to wonder about that.
She gripped the steering wheel so tightly, her fingers ached. What did she do with all this? It turned everything she'd thought about her life upside down.
But even if it was true, why did Allison write that cryptic note about it?
Chapter 30. Rock Harbor's early December weather was as far from Hawaii as it was possible to be. The ferocious wind blew snow across the road in front of Laurie's car as she fought to keep the wheels on the road. She was still reeling from her conversation with Peter in Indy. Did she really even know him? The coming sunset limned the barren trees in yellow and red and highlighted the buildings in town with vibrant color. It was hard to summon a smile to wave at Anu, who was locking up her shop for the night. Laurie could just hear the hullabaloo when she announced she was breaking her engagement. It would be more proof that she was immature and impetuous, and maybe she was. She'd gotten engaged after only 5 days. Who did that? Only a stupid kid with her head in the clouds who didn't stop to realize she didn't know the man who was asking. The crux of the matter was that she still loved Peter. At least, she thought that's what this pain in her chest signified. She'd had such rosy dreams of the future, a future that seemed almost too good to be true, and clearly it was. Or was she overreacting? She'd sprung her ideas on him after a long flight, and maybe he'd just been tired. They had time to figure all this out. She shouldn't have pushed him like that. Stopping at a light, she rubbed her forehead. Maybe Bree could shed some light on this, though Laurie hated to admit that her fairy tale romance was already in trouble. She glanced to her right and froze. A black SUV accelerated through the green light with its driver clearly visible. Peter Lovett. He didn't see her as he turned off Jack Pine Lane onto Quincy Street. Laurie closed her dangling mouth. What was he doing in Rock Harbor? Her pulse roared in her ears, and she tried to think through what he was doing here. She'd told him where she lived, so maybe he'd come to see her. But why wouldn't he call to meet her, or at least ask for her address? Could he be here to scope out buying a house? Maybe he wanted to surprise her with a home. That was it. Her heart rate settled, and she smiled. That would be just like Peter. When the light changed, she turned on to Quincy as well and watched for that black SUV.
There it was, parked in front of what used to be the Copper Junction Hotel. Someone had bought it and turned it into a 3-story mansion with mullioned windows and a new front door. She hadn't heard who had bought it. Someone from out of town, maybe? Maybe the owner was a friend of Peter's. She slowed her car and nearly pulled in behind the SUV. What would he do if she showed up and knocked on the door? She shook her head. The last thing she wanted to do was cause another argument. She wasn't ready to say the relationship was over. She turned around at the end of the road by the church and drove back past. Lights were on inside now, too, but she didn't see anyone through the windows. She drove back to the light and turned left onto Houghton and followed the curve onto Negaunee Street. Bree and Cade's lighthouse home was just ahead on the right, and the lights twinkled out over Superior. Home. More and more she was coming to realize how blessed she was to have her brother in Bree. She hadn't been the easiest teenager, and Cade had always loved her. Bree, too. They would understand her dilemma now. They always did. She pulled into the drive and parked behind Bree's green Jeep. That thing should have been retired long ago. But Bree loved it, so Cade had kept it in top working condition. Laurie's boots crunched through the snow, and she felt a surge of joy as she pushed open the front door and heard the children laughing as they played tag with Samson. She'd always taken this place for granted. How wrong she'd been. She shed her coat and hung it up in the closet in the foyer, then stepped into the living room. Zorro leapt up with a happy bark and raced to put his cold nose against her hand.
Good boy. Did you miss me?
Cade's face lit in a smile when he saw her.
I didn't expect you until tomorrow.
He rose and moved toward her. She stepped into his hug and burrowed against his broad chest.
I missed you, big brother.
He dropped a kiss on her hair, then took her by the shoulders and pulled her away enough to look into her face.
Whoa. What's wrong?
Does something have to be wrong for me to miss you?
She knelt and hugged the twins, who had rushed over to greet her. Hannah had Bree's pointed chin and hairline, and was crazy about dogs. Hunter was stocky like his handsome father and loved helping his daddy with orphaned wildlife. They both had Cade's soft, dark hair. Davy hung back a bit, but she pulled him into an embrace, too. He didn't protest, but threw his arms around her waist. Bree got up also, and her gaze studied Laurie's face. I'll make some coffee. There's vegetable soup cooking, and I'm sure it's ready if you're hungry.
Starving.
Laurie followed her into the kitchen and left Cade with the kids. Zorro stayed on her heels. Her brother always knew when to lag behind and let Bree counsel her. Smart man. Laurie went to the coffee pot.
I'll make the coffee.
She opened the canister and put beans in the grinder.
Hey, that remodel of the old hotel downtown looks pretty good. Who owns it?
Bree stirred the soup, then began to ladle it into bowls. Chris Newell, Dana's brother. He'd been gone from the country for about 10 years, then moved back and bought it 2 years ago. He's done a great job. Dana lives there with him for now. Laurie tried to remember what Chris looked like.
I'm not sure I've ever met him.
Probably not. You don't really run in the same circles. You would have been like 13 when he left the area. Nice guy. I'm sure you'll run into him at some point. She carried bowls of soup to the table. You're going to tell me what's wrong? Laurie made a face. Just wondering if I've made a mistake about Peter. Everything moved so fast. I'll look like a fool if I give him his ring back, though. Bree set down the bowls and turned to face her. It's not foolish to be careful of a lifetime commitment. You don't really know Peter yet. Not really. If you have even a hint of trepidation, it's smart to put on the brakes. This is your whole future, Laurie. You're only 23. If he's the one, going slower won't hurt anything. Just the advice Laurie needed. Bree always saw things with a clear gaze. I love you, you know. You've always been there for me, Bree, and I haven't always appreciated it. Bree's green eyes filled with moisture, and she hugged Laurie. We're always here for you, Laurie, always. And Laurie intended to count that blessing more often. After church on Sunday, Boone opened a photo editing program and pulled up the half-hidden figure they'd seen earlier. He played with the settings a few minutes until the man's face came into focus a bit more. Frowning, he studied the enhanced photo.
The guy looked a bit like Chris. His gut clenched, but Boone couldn't ignore the similarity either. Was it possible? Chris traveled a lot. He went back to the picture of the ring and looked at it again. Where had he seen it? His jaw tight, he studied it until it clicked. It looked a lot like Laurie's ring. He flipped over to Laurie's social media page and scrolled through her pictures until he found one of the ring. Surely it was the same ring. He couldn't be sure unless he looked at it more closely, but he was 99% sure. What about Faith Rogerson's ring? He found her social media profile as well, and it had open settings so he was able to look at the pictures. There it was. The ring looked the same. He struggled to catch his breath. Reaching for the phone, he called Detective Morgan's office and asked an employee to scan and email the police drawing they'd made of Tyler. A few